Enlil is the second son to King Anu. Born of the double seed makes him King Anu's heir. He's the eldest son born of the second of the double seed, which simply means that he is born of King Anu and King Anu's sister wife. That gives him two strains or a double seed of bloodline to the king. Therefore, he has a greater bloodline to the king than, say, his older brother Enki, who is the wisest of them all. But Enki, older, smarter, is not the heir to King Anu, because he is born of Anu and his concubine, and therefore not of the double seed. Enlil is his Mesopotamian name, and he's probably best known as with his Greek name Zeus, or his Viking or Norseman name Odin. Anyway, he is the Earth Colony commander. Anu has put him in charge of the operation of occupying Earth and mining the gold, shipping it to Mars, and then Mars to planet Nibiru. Enlil set his residence up in Nippur, in the land between the rivers. That's the rivers Euphrates and Tigris. There were two ancient rivers, one on each side of those, making it the land between the four rivers, which emptied into the Gulf. So if you take the area of southern Iraq and follow the Euphrates up north, you would run into Nippur, the command center for Earth Colony. Enlil married Ninlil, who has a bloodline to the king, King Anu. Enlil was known for his light sky blue eyes, which kind of shocked me, but that's what it is. You know, I couldn't tell you what color hair these guys got. I would imagine it's the colors we see today. We look like them. Enlil's main son, meaning his heir, is Ninurta, who is born of the double seed, meaning he was born of Enlil and Enlil's half-sister, Ninhursag. Ninhursag is the chief medical officer and a full sister to Enki. He had many sons and some daughters as well. And these sons all had major positions somewhere on Earth. Enlil is known, his word is final, meaning whatever Enlil states, that's the way it is. There's no argument, there's no going back on it. His word is absolute on Earth, and therefore final. There are many situations that happened on Earth, but starting at the beginning, it was Enlil who decided that Alalu would be executed. It was Enlil's son who executed him. Enlil, being in charge, and what they ended up with was 900 workers from Nibiru. Enlil took 300, and they worked the land between the rivers, setting up a home base and setting up their subsistence, meaning they established farming there, growing vegetables and grains. They established the cattle pens and the herds of sheep, which they, sheep was their favorite meal, and they fed off of those two animals. Looking at his slideshow, you'll see Enlil in an authoritative position, and he's usually talking to one of his sons, or sometimes to a king. Now, it was Enlil who brought kingship down to earth, meaning Enlil appointed the first kings, and you needed Enlil's consent to appoint them afterwards, later on. Enlil was disgusted with Enki because Enki was experimenting with the animals, trying to come up with a worker. What happened was Enlil took care of the land between the rivers. Enki was stuck in the mines, digging out the gold, shipping it up to Enlil, who had it smelted, and once it was processed down to pure gold, and they would accumulate a good load, they would ship that load via space truckers to Mars. There were 300 of them establishing Mars and trucking supplies to Nibiru and from Nibiru. It would go from Earth to Mars, where it'd be warehoused until planet Nibiru, their home, would cross through in its orbit. It would cross right through our planetary system, and that they would be right on the outside of the asteroid belt, which is much closer to Mars, much simpler to warehouse it there until the planet comes by once every 3,600 Earth years, and then they drop the gold off at Nibiru, and then pick up whatever supplies or people that they were to bring back to Earth. And that process went on for thousands of years. So under Enlil, you would have the farming, you would have the medical services, you would have the animals for feed, you would have the record keeping, you would have the homes, construction, the canal digging, a lot of work, a ton of it. Although working in the mines was worse. And there was a time, the 300 working under Enki in the mines went on strike, and they literally marched on Enlil's residence in Nippur, standing outside his ziggurat, demanding to see Enlil. Very possibly, Enlil's life was in danger. So Enlil asked for Father King Anu to come to Earth and settle the problem that he couldn't, Enki's workers could not get relief. Nobody would come in and relieve these guys. Enlil wouldn't trade his guys, where they would swap, as suggested by Enki. That was refused. So the workers down in the mines, there was no help for them, and no relief, no breaks, and no women. They were very upset. So after being turned down by Enlil and then King Anu coming down to Earth to try to settle the problem before their civil war, definitely bad feelings between them. Anu settled the matter by having he, Enlil, and Enki draw straws for responsibility. The long straw was responsible for returning to planet Nibiru, their home, and being in charge of it, acting as king. The medium straw would rule the land between the rivers and whatever else is going on Earth's colony. And the short straw is in the mines. And what happened there, probably fixed by King Anu. Anu went back to Nibiru, the king. Enlil stayed in the garden, the Eden. And Enki went back to the mines. Well, there was no change, and again, Enki's people are stuck. So Enki, being upset, and all of them being upset, he decided he would try to figure out how he could produce a worker out of the animals that he sees running around Earth. So he started doing experiments. Left and right, he and his son, Nengazita, were taking animals, and you'd see half this and half that, and, you know, trying to make a worker class to relieve his people. And there was no success. He just wasn't getting anywhere. Failure after failure for a long period of time. It was frustrating them very badly. So Enki saw a hominid, basically Neanderthal, walking around on two legs in South Africa, where he was. Seeing this creature, he decided he would modify it, upgrade it through mixing their DNA with the creature's DNA, trying to bring him to where he would have a voice box, he would have intelligence, he would be able to follow directions, take orders, and do the load, do the workload, remove it from the backs of the gods and place it on the new worker race. And basically, that's how we came about. From that need came Adapa, or Adam. And through Adam, who was kept in the garden, in the Eden, he was to reproduce as fast as he can, he and his spouse, Titi, or Eve. And the first son, Cain, was handed over to his son, Ninurta, and taught farming, taught the plow. And there's an artifact to that, where Enlil is handing the plow to Ninurta, who's got Cain, and it takes him away to learn. Another son was Abel, and Abel was given to Dumuzi, and they taught how to handle the sheep and keep track of the cows, make sure everybody's fed, and so forth, whatever needs there would be for those animals that they fed off of. And from the Eden, they established everything needed to exist there. And that's a lot of work. I mean, that would even include making clothes. Okay, so the first everything is established in Mesopotamia, in the land between the rivers. And the ziggurats are their homes. About every 50 miles up the Euphrates, you would find a ziggurat. And one of them, one of the royal family of King Anu, would live in that home. Again, Enlil's was in Nippur. Command, control. That's where everything was centered. There, as you scroll down, well, first of all, on the slideshows, you'll see Enlil talking to his sons, talking to the girls, which were very few, and talking to the first kings, which were mixed breeds. As Enki developed the workers, the women became attractive to these guys, to the gods, who are standing about 14 feet tall. And of course, the earthling is like maybe 4, maybe 5 or 6 feet tall. So when the sons of God came down and had sex with the daughters of man, you'll find that passage at Genesis 6, which really caught my attention and brought me to establishing this website, telling the story of the gods who came down. So the gods started having sex with the daughters of man because there just were no females for anybody except the royal-blooded females, and they were taken by royal-blooded males. So anyway, eventually, as many years go by, these gods had sex with the daughters of man. And as the Genesis would tell you, the offspring of after having sex with them became the heroes of old, the men of renown, meaning the first kings, who were worth writing about. Not every king was that important, but there were definitely some kings, and they were written down in the text. There's also a list of kingship that you can find when you go to the cities on the website there, on those pages. And those list of kings, some of them are before the flood, and then the list of kings after the flood. And you can see from that list how long these kings lived before the flood. As the Bible had heroes like Methuselah that lived 1,000 years, the king's list showed you that they lived, the kings would live much longer than that. And then after the flood, their lifespan was cut dramatically. But the flood itself, now that we're on that topic, was caused by Enlil. Basically, Enlil takes a asteroid, sends it into the ocean, which creates a huge splash, a tidal wave, that flooded the Earth. And of course, the rains came and everything else. It's just like told in the story. And that tidal wave flooded and was supposed to kill all of Enki's experiments that Enlil was disgusted with. The half this animal, half that animal, all the crazy experiments that Enki was doing down south. And also, he wanted to get rid of the mixed breeds, the giant mixed breeds, their offspring, who would stand 8 to 10 feet tall. Now, it'd be real simple for an earthling to see who their leader is, because he's a giant. And that giant not only has the bloodline of the gods, but he would be in a position of importance appointed by Enlil, or later on by Enlil's sons. These kings, the heroes of old, men of renown, to keep their bloodline pure, they did exactly what the gods did. They copied the gods on everything. So they would marry their sister. If they had none, they would marry their half-sister. If they had none, they would marry their first cousin. And if they had none of those, they had no heir. And that would, of course, would cause chaos, and Enlil would step in and create a new line, a new dynasty, who would be a giant of their bloodline. Now, Enlil got to the point where he was having offspring with the daughters of man and producing kings himself. But before the flood, he was disgusted with all that and definitely not happy with how long they were living. So he ordered the destruction of life on Earth. And that brought the decision to create the flood. The gods simply blasted off Earth and stayed in space, watching what happens. And, you know, of course, some would go to the moon, some would go to Mars, waiting for the floods to subside, and they came back and started over. Well, on their way back, Enlil notices someone's cooking lamb, an offering to the gods. And on what? They're all supposed to be dead. So he discovers Noah. And boy, he loses it, as he often did. And he starts chewing Enki's butt. What's he doing alive? They're all supposed to be this or that. You know, they're all supposed to be wiped out. And you saved this one. Why? Enki tells his younger brother, who will do the work now, since all the workers were wiped out? Who's going to do the work? Us again? We're going to have to do all this work, cleaning up the flood, reestablishing things on Earth by ourselves, without workers, and without any replacements, relief. Enlil goes, well, you got a point. I guess we'll allow Noah to survive. And again, man's survived, and Noah and his sons reproduced, and the population started to increase on Earth. So again, everything, all these decisions came from Enlil. And Enlil's decision was final. He didn't much like the Earthlings, believe me. It was Enki who was very fond of them. As you scroll down, you'll see under Enlil's quotes, you'll see a photograph of a discovery that the archaeologists had of many texts, which are the first writings on Earth. The cuneiform was the written language and spoken language of the time. And the gods wrote some of these tablets, and later on, the mixed breed kings wrote some tablets. But these are the records of Earth, and we're talking very important to read. To the right of that is, you see these texts sitting in a library, organized as you would the libraries today. Now, there are hundreds of thousands of these texts and artifacts. I mean, they were discovered in all these ancient cities in the land between the rivers, which is southern Iraq and Syria, in that area between the rivers. Like I said, Enlil espoused Nenlil, and Nenlil had sons and daughters, and there are artifacts of Nenlil with her sons and Nenlil with the kings. There is a text called Enlil the Nenlil, or The Rape of Sud, who is Nenlil. And in this text, it describes Nenlil swimming naked. Enlil, passing by, discovers her and forces himself upon her. She is both excited and upset. She runs home to her mother, tells her what happened, and her mother wants to press charges. So they do. And according to their law, they have the assembly of gods, and she brought Enlil before the assembly. Now, Enlil's the top guy, but he's charged with rape. And lo and behold, he's sentenced to the underworld. Just incredible that the top guy could be sentenced to the underworld, but there are texts that state just that. Nenlil, seeing what happened there, has second thoughts on what happened, on his punishment. So she decides, by requesting that she go to the underworld and rescue Enlil by saying, "I'll marry him," which would take the crime and remove it from his record. So Nenlil descends to the underworld, searches for Enlil, and finds him and lets him know what she'll do. She marries him, and Enlil returns, escapes from the underworld, where no one gets to escape. So these texts are important. Some of them are very important. Some of them are just give you a little bit of information. But I definitely, when you see the three stars, that's highly recommended. The two stars is recommended, and the one star is a little less recommended. But still, as I say, it's a must read. Information there. Do you do Genesis as you scroll down? That's an important text as well. Let's see here, the Sumerian flood text, again, a text. Here's a text called the Lament of Urim, or Ur. Ur is the city where Abraham comes from. By the way, the heroes of old, men of renown, under the Hebrew line, the first 10 heroes of the Bible before the flood, going down to Noah, they all married their sister, if there was none, half-sister, if there was none, first cousin. And their eldest son of their official wife would become the heir. So it went from Adam down to Noah under that law, the double seed law of succession, which is just simply copying the gods. They copied the gods on everything. They learned to do the work from the gods. Everything man knows, he learned from the gods. And you can tell that through the text, and just simply by figuring that out, as man knew nothing when he's born, then all of a sudden he's gone from the caveman into civilized man living in cities, building homes, doing the work, you know, reproducing. It didn't make sense. It's called the missing link, if you want to talk scientifically. Evolution has a huge gap of about 1 million years of evolution. It's all missing. But if you understand the modification done by Enki and his sister and Herzog, man was upgraded and upgraded and upgraded until he developed a modern man who can understand, take orders, and do the work. So down to Noah, they're born of the double seed. Noah married his first cousin, Botanus or something like that was her name. And from Noah, 10 generations down to Abraham, it was the same practice. They married their sister, if none, their half-sister, and so on. As an example, Abraham married his sister, Sarah. And when Sarah seemed to be barren and no child is born, no heir born to Abraham. Abraham, the leader, who is a giant, mixed breed, and lived longer. He was taller, stronger, smarter, and an earthling could easily identify him. So Abraham, by the way, whose father was Terah, who was the high priest of the Ziggurat Temple of Ur. That would make him the second most powerful man in the city of Ur. So it's not like Abraham was a poor sheepherder. Shepherd boy, that just wasn't true. And so anyway, you would see things going on through these texts. And there's one called the Lament of Ur, or Urim. And what that is, as I try to explain, I must read three times, what that is, it tells you of a nuclear war between Enlil's line and Enki's line. Inky's eldest son, Marduk, warred against Enlil and his sons. And reason being, he felt Enki was cheated out of the top position as supreme god on earth. And that would make him Enki's heir, and therefore he was cheated out of being supreme god. Now, Marduk is responsible for the advanced city of Babylon. These are city-states, by the way. They're their own entity. And Babylon was way ahead of other locations. And he brought man forward in knowledge and learning and everything else. Also, Marduk is responsible for the civilization of Egypt. Marduk and his descendants ran Egypt for a long time. So, and there his name was Ra. So if you hear of Ra, that's Marduk, who fought against Enlil and his descendants. It got to the point that Enlil's sons, Ninurta and Nergal, nuked. There were some nuclear missiles on Earth that Alalu brought to Earth. Those were hidden by Anu and Enlil, and eventually they got so mad at Marduk that Enlil decided that they would be used against Marduk. And there you have the Lament of Urim, which is a cry out from his son, saying, "Save my city, Ur," which is a dominant city in the land between the rivers. And he's pleading to his father Enlil to save it. And Enlil simply tells him, "I did not tell you that Ur would live forever." To that regard, you read the text, you'll see. But again, these are all Enlil's decisions. And so the nuclear, the evil winds, as the Bible would call it, the evil winds with the fallout basically wiped out Mesopotamia. And, you know, so they had to start over in another location. So also, Enlil was in charge of the landing zones, the blast off and landing. You don't leave planet Earth without Enlil's approval. And Enlil had his grandson, Utu, in charge of the spaceports, the landing zone, the blast off. So you can see how powerful Enlil is and was to Earth. He's responsible for everything bad that happened here, and also for everything that exists here. It was started in Mesopotamia by him and his descendants, while Enki was stuck in the mines. Now, Enki, the Greek name Poseidon, he was the god of the waters, and there was a lot he could do to assist Enlil. So anyway, as you scroll down, you'll see like how grain came to Sumer, debate between the hoe and the plow. All these things were introduced to man by Enlil and Enlil's descendants. Song of the Hoe, Farmer's Instructions, You see these texts. You scroll down a little further and you see Enlil with the mixed breed kings. Now you can always tell on the artifacts the gods wear a tall crown of animal horns. And usually the taller the crown, the more important you are. And the king wore a different style cap. By the way, all of mankind wore the long beard, which is again copying the gods who wore long beards, the males, that is. And when Cain killed Abel, by the way, he was given the mark of God, which is simply he was modified to where his descendants had difficulty growing any kind of facial hair. And then he was cast east of Eden, kicked out of Mesopotamia. And east of Eden will place him in China. And if you take a look, the Chinese and the Japanese and so forth, Taiwanese, and, no beard. And if they have facial hair, it's not much as the time went by. Also, the native Indian in America, no beard. These are from the line of Cain. Just a little tidbit of information there. So you see Enlil and some of the goddesses and kings standing before Enlil getting their instructions. And you'll see some kings executed by Enlil's command and some kings elevated. The major gods had their flying saucers, therefore, like Enlil, he was all-seeing, all-knowing. If you take a look at what we have today, we use satellites in space to give us all-seeing. And therefore, we copied them again. So you would see the king before Enlil, the king, a giant mixed breed with a long beard, receive his instructions from the top god. A time when the gods walked with man. And there are texts about these kings and Enlil. So there are texts before man could read and write, written by the gods, and there are talking of the olden days, and there are texts written by the kings, mixed breed kings, descendants of the gods, and they were taught to read and write. And so records were kept again, this time written by the mixed breeds, giants. These texts are important, some of them. I hate to tell you how many times I've read them, but I recommend that you read them, at least the ones marked a must read. You'll pick up tidbits of information, if not a ton of information. Then Enlil occasionally would have sex with the daughters of man and produces his own direct offspring who would become king, and you see some texts pertaining to that. Enlil's symbol is the seven-pointed star, or seven dots. And that simply means, oh, by the way, you can stop the slideshow by putting your cursor on one of the artifacts. That would halt the slideshow so you can study the artifact much closer. And usually a short description would pop up as to what you're looking at. But anyway, here's a slideshow of the seven dots, or a symbol of seven planets. If you are outside of our solar system, as their planet orbits way outside, it's a long elliptical orbit, which takes 3,600 years to orbit around the sun. Anyway, it is a planet in our solar system, and scientists are just now discovering this planet. They call it Planet X. And they acknowledge it has an elliptical orbit, and it's way out in space. Anyway, coming from way out in space into towards the sun, the seventh planet in, lucky number seven, is Earth. So when you see the seven dots on the artifact, or seven balls, representing planets. That's Enlil's symbol, showing you that he is the commander of Earth. A lot to read into these symbols. These symbols, by the way, are kept alive today through the Masons. So these symbols are pretty important. You'll see them everywhere once you learn the symbols and who it represents. Very good information there in taking a close look at the symbols. You'll also see a disc in the sky with wings. Now, the wings simply are depicting, letting the viewer know that this disc is flying. So therefore, it's a flying disc. Well, 5,000 years ago, nothing's flying that an earthling would be associated with. And so what you're looking at there are the flying discs, or flying saucers, of the gods. And that's how they came here in the first place. They had to travel from a planet from a far distance. And of course they came looking for gold, because their planet was in deep trouble from the nuclear wars they had. And they used the gold to patch the damage to the ozone layer, not the ozone, but a protective layer that holds their atmosphere in. They patched the damage, the hole, with gold that they convert into some type of a flake, filling the hole, keeping the atmosphere in, therefore saving their planet. That's how important this gold is to them. And gold is known as the metal of the gods. That's why. It literally has saved their planet, and the only place they find gold in our solar system is on Earth. And of course, on the asteroid belt, which is nothing more than pieces of Earth that was knocked out. When Enuma Elish is the text that will tell you that their moons crashed into a planet called Tiamat, literally cut it in half as four moons hit it. One half on the outside of Mars is knocked to the inside of Mars. The other half remained on the outside of Mars and was smashed into bits by their planet and moons. And so what you had there is now the asteroid belt, and the other half became Earth, and the tremendous gash in Earth filled with water, and the land started drifting down towards the hole or the tremendous gash, and they call that continental drift. So anyway, you'll see artifacts of the seven planets and artifacts showing a flying disk. All of this is has been kept secret. The powers that exist today on Earth do not want you to know this. What would their power be if you knew they'd been lying to you the whole time? So the secret societies know about this. They've kept it secret with severe penalties, such as being disemboweled if you leak the secrets. I was invited to join a Masonic lodge, and the reason I was invited is because I was talking about my website and what I had learned. I was invited into the lodge with the idea of shutting me up, because I'm telling everyone, as you see, I have a website that's putting the information out worldwide. And by God, there's a lot of people that come and become educated by my website worldwide. Every nation on Earth has visited my website, unless you do not have the internet. And there's about three that don't in Africa. You'll see in those seven dots representing the seventh planet and his authority upon the seventh planet. That's why it's his symbol. Or scroll down, you'll see the seven-pointed star, which is the same thing as the seven dots. It's a symbol of Earth, and in Lil's command on Earth. Now, a seven-pointed star, by the way, is a symbol for the sheriff, for the position of authority in the legal world. So when you see a sheriff or a representative of law enforcement wearing a badge with seven pointed star on it, what they're representing there is the authority of Enlil. It's amazing how these symbols are present all over our societies today, all over our planet. And you see them in churches, you see them in governments, they're everywhere. Then there's a symbol that you don't see much at all. In those crown of horns, animal horns. And there's a few artifacts that have the horns of Anu and Enlil and Enki. Then there's Enlil's tree of life. Somehow that's related to Enlil when mankind is directly related to Enki and his sister Nin-Hurzog, was helped by his amazing son Ningazita, who also has the knowledge of the DNA. By the way, Ningazita, his symbol is the entwined serpent, which you'll see in our medical logo in the United States. The entwined serpent on a royal staff with a crown showing the bloodline of the gods. And the DNA double helix strand is the entwined serpents. That's Ningazita's symbol were depicting his involvement with Enki and Ninhursag forming man into forming caveman into modified modern man. Well, that would be in those websites, and there's a lot more than what I had to say here, and I strongly recommend you study some of this. When you see in those symbol and the Masonic ring or the Masonic flags, or it's everywhere. Like I said, it's in the marshals, the sheriffs, the positions of authority, law enforcement. The authority comes from Enlil. Kingship was brought down to earth by Enlil. If you weren't appointed by Enlil, you weren't king. And it just, all these things started in the land between the rivers, Tigris and Euphrates. And all of it was done by the gods who came down and then eventually had sex with the daughters of man once Enki had brought them into being.